Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Three-time major winner Padraig Harrington is live on the line, we hope. Evening, Padraig.
Evening, Joe. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thanks so much for joining us. So, reflections over the last 2 days or so on the Czech Masters, where I'm sure people know you finished second in the end after leading for so much of the Sunday.
Yeah, look, it's nice to play well in a tournament and to be up there and be competitive. So, overall, I'd be pretty positive about it. I know Andrea played very well to win it. I will look back and see a couple of areas that, you know, I could have been better in, but I still genuinely feel I was beaten rather than lost it. So, you know, nothing to worry about and really take some positives from and kind of hope that I finish the rest of the year off strong on the back of it.
Yeah, I mean, he played really well. If someone birdies 10, 12, 14, and then 16 and 17, by all accounts, are very difficult holes, five birdies on the back nine, you're not going to have to do much wrong to lose out to someone who's playing that well. He seemed to just really click into gear.
He did, you know. Yeah, absolutely. Look, outside of him, I suppose it wasn't expected that he would do 500 for the back nine. I can look at myself and go, well, if I birdied 10, 12, two par fives, and then obviously I bogeyed 15, a difficult par four, you know, they're mistakes I made, but to be honest, I hit the ball pretty well all the way through the back nine and created plenty of chances. The ball just, you know, on the day, it just wasn't my day. You know, he held the putts, I didn't. These are the sort of things happen. The key for me and for any golfer is put yourself in that position enough times. You'll have some sad Sunday afternoons, but you'll also have some very happy ones.
You've made the point before that some players almost find it so painful to lose down the straight like that, that maybe they self-sabotage to some extent, or they certainly don't like being in that position where that kind of pain can be inflicted.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, they're afraid of the repercussions of it all, people, the judgments of whether why you lost or why you didn't win. And as I said, I've had plenty of second places over the years. I think it's now 33 I saw somewhere. I've had loads of third and fourth places and fifth and sixth places as well. And they're not all the same. You know, every one of those second places, all 33 of them, they didn't happen the same way. Some of them I played great to finish second and some I made an absolute mess of it to finish second. Sometimes I was beaten by a better player. Sometimes I was beaten by a stroke of luck. Who knows? But the key is the more times you have those opportunities, some days you'll get the breaks and other days, you know, it will go against you. But as long as you don't mind some of the criticism that goes with losing, you know, it really doesn't matter. You'll get the winning days and the winning days make up for it.
Because, before you proved the opposite was the case, when you had a good run of seconds before you really clicked into gear in your career, you know, the term choker could have been cruelly used, all the second places for a long time. Clearly you were able to kind of shut all that out at the time and just digest that second place still isn't bad and not run away from it.
Not necessarily that way. I had enough wins to keep me going. You know, it wasn't like I had all the second places and no wins.
Yeah.
So I was getting enough wins to keep me going, and most of the time, I'm quite an optimistic person, so I'd be seeing the good in a lot of things, and I'd be seeing what I'd be learning. You know I made mistakes over the years. You know, I could look back over the years, and I would say, with my personality, the biggest mistake I tend to, and still have an issue with it today, I tend to put all my resources into getting ready for Thursday, and sometime by the time Sunday comes along, I'm burnt out, and I definitely would have been burnt out on some of those Sundays. I could see how, you know, going into Sunday, I'd nearly overplayed it. And Sunday, it kind of takes two times the energy on Sunday that it does on a Saturday. Or, you know, you really do have to be fresh. Somebody like Monty, who was a prolific winner in Europe, you know, he just didn't do any work during the week. Tiger never went to the practice ground at a tournament in his heyday. He warmed up before he played, and then you'd never see him on the practicing afterwards, and that really does help to be mentally strong on Sunday when you haven't overworked during the week. And there's no doubt I would be in the category of obsessing if overworking, and in certainly in my heyday, I would have overdone things at tournaments in terms of practice. Now I would have a golden rule at a tournament that I don't practice any technique whatsoever up until I feel that the tournament's beyond me. And I certainly don't go to the range. If I have a chance of winning on a Saturday evening, going out there on Sunday, I certainly don't go and do any more work. I even if I have something to fix, I leave it alone and just turn up on Sunday and play.
You've made the point in the last few years, I suppose the autumn of your career, that maybe one of the bigger challenges for you out on tour now was actually getting the adrenaline to put yourself in a position on a Sunday, that you don't turn up naturally on a Wednesday at a standard tournament full of the wide-eyed wonderment that you had once upon a time. But that once you got in there on a Sunday, that old adrenaline kicked back in and you felt alive again and you really felt in a good place. Were you still getting that rush as much as ever when you were there on the Sunday and in the mix?
Yeah, I was calmer this Sunday than I think I've probably ever been on a Sunday in a tournament. I didn't get all the cliches you want. I know the cliches. I didn't get ahead of myself. I stayed in the present. So I didn't suffer any of the highs and lows, the roller coaster of emotion on a Sunday. I was pretty level all the way through. I did think, I thought I was going to win. So there wasn't that big, it wasn't like I was chasing the leader and, he fell back or something like that. So pretty much the only time, after he holed the putt in 16 to go one ahead, that was a bit of a shock to me. And I thought myself, I could feel a different gear kick in. I could see the difference in my focus over the putts on 16, 17, 18 and that. Mm. There was a little bit at that stage, but I would have said I quite liked my overall mental attitude on Sunday. There was enough focus without being, the scary eyes weren't there, but, I wasn't relying on them either. Mm.
You mentioned not practicing technique at a tournament. We obviously saw the subtle change in your takeaway. Is it just this tournament you've been doing that?
It was hardly subtle. I started that on the Sunday of 4 weeks ago at a tournament. The week before the PGA, I was looking at some video and I was looking at, I still have this lateral move off the ball, which is an issue for me. And I was trying to figure out how I could get rid of it. And overnight, I came up with this idea that I could set it in position so that I haven't moved off the ball and swing from there. I tried it immediately that day because I knew if I didn't try it in a tournament round, I couldn't bring it to the big tournament the following week, being the PGA Championship. Mm. And, I've liked it. My coach loves it. I could set the club for a fade or a draw in position, and it stops me from, which has always been an issue of mine, I tend to push off very hard from the takeaway. I've quite a big squat to move off it, and I move a little bit out of position. Mm. And this takes all that out. One of the greatest ball strikers of all time is a Canadian called Mo Norman.
Yeah.
And that's how he started his backswing. He started in position rather than trying to get to that position, which is one of the hardest things to do in the golf swing, is that initial move away from the ball.
Mo Norman's gone a while now. You never came across him in person, did you?
No, not at all. I heard all the stories, obviously, and that. But look, you would know with me, I'm not afraid of trying something if I feel like it will work better. The key for me is, I have to be able to, I want to do things. So I could stand there and try and swing the club back without moving, but that would require a lot of conscious thought.
Yes.
Whereas this gets me in position without me having to think about it. And again, I can just let it go from there rather than have to consciously decide on what I'm doing, which is, the key to doing anything. Well, one of the keys is try not to be too conscious of what you're doing and let the subconscious take over.
Mm. And as the pressure grew to a point on Sunday, did that feel stranger, or was that was okay all the way through? Because you were still hitting good shots right to the end.
Oh, I thought I hit the ball really well at the end. Hit some really nice shots all the way through. If I go back, I can as I said, I can only rue three shots on the whole day. I hit a poor second into the tenth, which I was distracted by. There was the TV were cleaning up behind us, and I was still thinking about when I hit it. And then I hit two draws, big draws, when I was trying to hit little draws on 12 and 15. Look, they were solid hits. They were overdrawn. It's a little, I can look at it and pick it out and say, oh, I need to do that better or whatever. But I was happy enough with it. I've got to say, there was not a lot wrong. I would be happily do that every tournament, and I will get plenty of paydays out of that, let's say. I'll have some wins if I played the same way.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, unfortunately for you, the 20 under that you finished up with is the second lowest score in the history of that course. So, I mean, you were right there.
Well, what I liked about it is I don't think I've ever had a tournament where I only made two bogeys.
Yeah. One in round two and one the 15th in the final round is extraordinary going.
Yeah, you know, the 15th is it was a 300-yard carry over a bunker, which means I had to hit a high, which I'm not very straight when I go to launch the ball in the air. I'm much better hitting it low, but I had to go for it, and I overdrew it. So I'm not beating myself up over it. It's something I can work on, obviously, and I hit a nice putt. I did see the coverage, and they were trying to make out that, you know, this happened or that happened when I hit the putt. And, you know, the reality is I hit a nice putt inside right lip, hoping that would move initially, and it didn't, and it missed. And yeah, look, you don't want to leave yourself too many of those putts on a Sunday because, you know, they don't always go in. But even at that stage, I still thought I was in a winning position with three holes to play, but obviously he reversed things, hold a big putt in 16, and I missed it. Mm. But that's what happens. You know, golf is just like that. You cannot have ultimate control in golf. There's so many things going on. You can hit a great putt and it misses, and you can hit an average putt and it goes in. It's just the nature of the game. You don't have that control. Like if you're the better tennis player, you're going to win against a weaker opponent nearly every time. But in golf, it doesn't work like that. There's other factors, and you just have to keep giving yourself as many opportunities as you can. I know it's a cliche in that, but that is the difference with golf. We play 30 tournaments a year. It's not like we're just playing once, and if you're knocked out, you're done for. There's always another week, and if you just keep playing solid and consistent, you give yourself those opportunities, and on the week you win, it makes the team all worthwhile. But I will say, finishing second this last week, it's one of the best second places for my own confidence and my own game that I probably have ever had.
Yeah, I'm sure. The answer here is kind of self-evident, but I'll ask it a stupid question all the same. 2 years ago when you were at Portugal, one of my abiding memories is you had a note, you were kind of tugging at your backside or something. There was a swing thought thing there that was a little bit quirky, and we saw what you've done over the last number of weeks, and we see you doing some funny stuff on driving range as well, drills that catch the eye. Do you ever feel self-conscious doing that in front of pros, or did you ever? Do you have to fight a voice in your head that says you look a bit silly, or does that ever even enter your head?
I'd be more self-conscious about it now than a few years ago. I wouldn't even, it didn't even cross my mind, but I get asked, and people, I get some criticism the odd time in terms of, you know, and people might mean to be critical. They say, oh, you're overthinking it, you're doing this, that, or the other, you're treating it like a scientist, and all these sort of things. And the interesting thing, every time you see me doing a drill, is I'm trying to do something in my golf swing without thinking about it. Whereas when you see another pro working on something, you can't tell he's working on it, but he's using his conscious brain to maybe change that takeaway. I'm trying to use a drill to change it so that I don't have to think about it.
To get out of your head. Yeah.
I know the only way to play is not, the only way I play anyway is not thinking about it. I just think about where I want to go and hit it. I don't want to get too much into it. And the drills, while I suppose they keep me happy, to keep me working in the right place without me having to overthink it.
You had a new caddy on the bag. So I think Ronan Flood was away.
He was on holidays. I wasn't due to play the Czech Masters. It was a late entry. I was keen to play. I've had such a bad summer, and I missed a stack of cuts, and I haven't felt like, I really felt like my game had turned around. I'd been putting well early in the year, then I started hitting the ball well, and a putting went wonky on me, and so I've been kind of desperate to get out on the golf course with the bad performances I wanted. I think, oh, I'm better than that, I should be doing better. And so, yeah, I was keen to play the Czech Masters. Ronan had a holiday booked in, and was smart enough to realise at the time that himself and his wife going away was more important than turning up for a fifth event in a row. So I got Jerry Byrne, who's a caddy out on tour for 20 years. He is retired, actually. He now he transfers the bags on tour. You know, he brings clubs from one event to the next and that. So he's always out there. And, you know, he was great. He didn't make a mistake all week, I've got to say. You know, he did his job diligently, and it was good entertainment to be around, plenty of stories. Somebody who's on tour all the time has all the stories. So from that perspective, it was very good. But it was very difficult for me not having the familiarity of my regular caddy. You know, just the familiarity of what I need and what I want. And you discover in a situation like that how high maintenance you are and how many things that Ronan would be doing for me that I don't even realise he's doing, that it's just, part and parcel of the job. So it was an interest. There was certainly more work to be done, but I suppose sometimes, a little bit of a change is a good thing.
When you have a bad summer like the one you've had, or a bad year on the whole, to what extent does it affect your mood away from the course?
Yeah, I'm good, and I'm obviously obsessive about golf, so generally if I've played bad, once I can get back on the horse, get back out practicing, get back into the next event, I forget about it. I have struggled this year in the States big time with that, because I've missed more cuts. You're away from home. So if you miss a cut, say Friday morning, you've missed a cut, you may not play again until Thursday afternoon. That's 6 days. 6 days of waiting for the next event only builds pressure, only builds stress. You can't hit that many balls because you're clearly in the middle of tournaments. You don't want to be working on your swing. So it that has been really difficult, very lonely, very tough on me this year. I don't think I would do it. I wouldn't be interested in that. Now, I missed the cut in Wentworth in the UK during the year, and I was home for tea time on Friday afternoon. That's a bonus. Yeah. It's like somebody gave me a bonus for missing the cut. I was delighted.
Yeah.
There I am home. So there's a big... I don't think I would play in the States if I was missing cuts like that. It's just too far away.
And with that in mind, when will you decide on whether or not... I think you have a career money list exemption.
Oh, yeah, no, I've already taken my exemption for next year. Yeah.
So I'm back out there.
I'm fully exempt for next year. I would play my minimum number of events in the States next year. I'm not really focused, on my future in the States. I'm happy to keep playing golf. I've the full exemption, but I see, playing golf courses sometimes, like last week in the Czech Republic, it really suits my game. I can literally, with the slightly slower greens, a little bit more receptive, I can get up and down from anywhere. So it suits my style of play. I can go at all the pins. In the US, there's quite a... with the greens being faster and generally faster and firmer, it is a more defensive golf courses, and that really doesn't... I don't like backing off at all. I just don't find it easy to do. So in the end of the day, playing a few more European Tour events would be good for my game, good for my confidence, and I will try and fit more in over the next period of time, because I like it. The conditions definitely suit me better.
You're more than welcome to give us the European Ryder Cup wildcard picks if you want.
Yeah. The inside track. I have it.
Right.
I want it.
Has it been decided?
No.
And how late do you leave that, or why would you leave that? I know Denmark's on, obviously, next week.
Well, there's three players playing this week that can qualify. So there's still people who can play their way in, which it would obviously change the dynamic of the picks.
Yeah.
There's obviously four picks, which is an awful lot of picks, I've got to say. We're discussing it all the time on a WhatsApp group, but it changes. It's very fluid how quick it can change and how thinking can change, from 2 months ago to a month ago to now. It's getting a little tighter to who, there's certainly a couple of names that are in our picks all the time. And it will be finally made up this Sunday. It really does come, well, Monday. We'll all get together on Monday and talk about it. And it really is, there's, as it always is as well with this, guys, current form is very important these days. Years ago, we used to go with, well, let's just pick the experienced guys. Yeah. We need the experienced guys for the rookies. And that's what the picks were really for. They were for experienced guys who were playing maybe in the States or that. Now, it's not really the case. The rookies have shown that if they're playing well, they're every bit, or they're actually better than the experienced guys. So it really will come down to the wire in terms of trying to pitch form against experience when it comes to the four picks, or at least the fourth pick.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a fantastic event. And one last Ryder Cup question on, like, there's a batch of exceptional European players. I mean, you're kind of at the forefront of it. Who'll be eyeing up a Ryder Cup captaincy? Is your time coming up sooner rather than later? The way things are shaping up, would you even be looking at 2020?
If you were starting to look at, yes, the way my schedule and things are working out, you know, and timings for the, you would got to think sooner rather than later, and you wouldn't want to risk waiting till later, because there's a pile of guys that, you know, certainly in 4 years' time, there's going to be a lot of guys who are going to be putting their name in the hat at that stage. You know, I'm not saying that some of them won't put their name in their hat over the next two, for the next one and even the next one, but, you know, some of them will still be young and will be maybe thinking they could play their way in, or maybe just putting their name in the hat so that they're considered the next time around. Mm. So it looks like Whistling Straits in 2020 will be something that I will look to do, and hopefully I will kind of get the nod if that's the case. But in the main, we're not talking about that. We're not discussing, you know, who's going what and what's sure. happening until after this Ryder Cup. You know, but certainly for me, I don't envisage waiting around until I'm, 54 years of age or something like that, because you could be long forgotten in the game of golf.
Yeah, no doubt. I have two last questions. Question one is about Tiger, and question two is about Rory. Tiger, firstly, you made the very interesting observation after Carnoustie that when he got a chance to, when he was in the lead, he almost reverted to being human, and you thought he might have reverted to being Tiger Woods again when he got a sniff of being top of the leaderboard. And then obviously we saw what he did at the USPGA. So are you now feeling it's more likely that Woods is going to win one more major than not? How convinced are you?
I'm incredibly impressed with his comeback. Just really impressed. He's in his current form, he's a great player again. He's still not the player he was. He's still not going to win with his B game.
Yeah.
But he has a game that is good enough to win majors, will win majors. And I really don't think it's won. I think he will win a few majors as long as he stays healthy. You know, I think that, you know, challenging 18 majors will be difficult, but it's on the cards. I definitely see him.
Wow.
One is a no-brainer. He's definitely winning another major. Two, I think, but, you know, the problem with saying he's going to win four or five is that's a pretty decent career for anybody. And he is a great player again. But, you know, there is going to be scar tissue there. He's not the same player he was, 10 years ago, or pre-10 years ago. So, you know, he's going to win them. And especially now, that's the last two majors he's got himself in contention. And as I said earlier, it really is a numbers game. You know, if he didn't come up against, you know, Brooks Koepka on form, buzzing on Sunday at the PGA, Tiger would have been there. And that's all it takes is, okay, one player beat him. You know, the next major he comes and it's an inexperienced guy, a rookie coming down the stretch or a guy who just doesn't have a good finish. And all of a sudden, Tiger, his great day on Sunday, has played him into a tie for the lead or the lead outright. He wins in a playoff, whatever it is. But it's circumstances. He's putting himself in place. He's got to feel confident. You know, his iron play is back to being, you know, could be the best in the game. It was always one of his strongest points, and you know all he needs is a decent week with the driver and the putter either side of it, and he's winning.
Yeah, it's amazing the difference he makes. I mean, the whole world stops and watches. It's quite kind of extraordinary.
It is an issue golf has.
Yeah,
we lack. It's different to other sports that the strength is so deep, and it's only getting deeper. That more random wins are happening, random players are happening, and people really just want to turn up and watch the person that they tuned in to watch winning on a Sunday or nearly winning on a Sunday. We've been spoiled with Tiger that, you know, if he was playing an event, you were nearly guaranteed, if you turned on the TV on Sunday evening, you know, he was challenging. And you know, we've missed him over the last couple of years, and you know, unfortunately going forward, that's something that's going to be an issue for golf, is delivering that sort of marquee name every Sunday evening, so that the casual golfer who's turning on, he doesn't mind a rookie winning and beating the sort of marquee player, but he needs to see the marquee player in order to pique his interest.
Yeah, and on Rory then, I guess the strength of depth point you make applies to it. Paul McGinley was on the show a couple of weeks ago, I think, after the USPGA, and he made a very interesting point on Rory, that there's been a shift in the landscape, and he said that, you know, for a while there was a consensus that if Rory was at his best, nobody could beat him in the post-Tiger era. And now, in McGinley's opinion, he would have all at their best. He would have Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka and Justin Thomas, probably all ahead of Rory if all four are at their best. Would you agree with that? And if so, that's a big psychological shift for Rory to try and digest and deal with.
I don't fully disagree with it. I think if Rory plays his best, he can beat anybody in the world. But the difference between now and 2011, and the difference between when Tiger was at his best, they believed they could go out and play their second best and win. Yeah. Rory knows he has to play his best to win, so he's under a little bit of more tension going out there, that he can't afford to miss 10 footers and putts and things, because he needs to be on form to beat the other players. Mm. Whereas in 2011, that he knew he had room to spare. He knew he could take a few hits during the day and still win the tournaments. And it's amazing. The more comfortable you feel, the less you miss those putts, the more good things that happen. The more you feel right in the edge. And this would be, I would look at this with me this year very much. I was missing a lot of cuts on the edge. I'm going out there feeling like it's an absolute sprint. I feel like it's a 100-meter race, and I've got to get the quickest start ever. If I'm not like 3 under par after 9 holes, I start looking at the cut line. Whereas when you're in great form, you know, it's more like a marathon. You can be patient. You know, I'm going to get a good run where I make 4 birdies in 9 holes or 5 birdies in 9 holes. Things are going to happen and develop. And I think that's the difference with Rory. It's the difference with Tiger. Tiger used to always say, you know, he was able to win with his B game. Can you imagine how easy it is to win tournaments if your B game is going to win? And how well you feel. And your B game never turns up. When you believe your B game is good enough, your A game always turns up.
Yeah.
When you need your A game, your B game turns up all the time, or most of the time. So that's really what's happened to Rory. He had this huge driving advantage off the tee. He's still one of the best drivers in the game, and maybe the best out there. But he had a massive advantage around 2011. That, you know, he was hitting it straight and 30 yards past everybody. Now you have 40 guys who are capable of doing close to him. And, you know, he's still only 2 or 3 do what he does, but you have a few that can surpass him, but he just is really confident as a driver. He hits it out there. But the fact of the matter is, you know, there's other guys, other strengths who have tightened up the margin, and he knows, you know, if DJ is playing well, if Brooks is playing well, if Jordan Spieth is playing well, he's got to play great to beat them.
Yeah. Porter, thanks so much. Fascinating as ever. Appreciate it. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.